Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know. No. Talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you got to make it happen.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Matt, happy Tuesday to you. I've got a packed show today, as we heard from both Michael Reinsdorf and Arturis Karnišovas yesterday for the first time, and I know he's been kind of doing his rounds on the radio today, but I figured this would give us a good opportunity for our listeners and for you and I to kind of discuss that initial teleconference that went on yesterday, because we didn't get to have an official press conference like they normally would do because of COVID-19. But how are you? Are you staying sane out there?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Doing all right. I don't know what day this is. I feel like we should start measuring in weeks or months now instead of days.
All
just kind of lumps together. But yeah, man, I mean, I think with more time that passes, with each day that passes, and of course the official news yesterday, and all of the official news that broke kind of, you know, as we were recording, first the team making the Arturis hire official, the Gar firing official, John's reassignment official, it all kind of started finally actually seem real. And I woke up today thinking that it seemed even more real. And how happy I am that this is what we get to talk about right now. I mean, it's crazy that these are the circumstances in which we're finally talking about an overhaul of the Bulls front office that the fan base has been asking for years. It just so happens that we're all doing it while we're on lockdown, you know, because of a global pandemic. Because I'm just trying to picture what the streets of Chicago would be like yesterday and today. And like, it would have been on par with celebrations recently, like the Cubs winning the World Series, Blackhawks winning the Cup. But just because Gar Forman got fired.
For real, the bars in Chicago, I mean, there would be buzz around baseball, but the talk of the town for the last 2 weeks at any sports bar you go to would be the Bulls, without a doubt. And it is, I think it hit more real this morning as I kind of listened back through this Michael Reinsdorf and Karnišovas interview, I guess, teleconference, whatever you want to call it. It felt like I was listening to a different team talk. I'm like, I don't remember hearing any of these answers from this owner, and I don't remember hearing any of these answers from the person that's supposed to be our basketball operations person. I'm used to hearing platitudes and things that are stretched out over 3 or 4 years, same thing over and over again. So it was refreshing to hear. But Matt, let's just dive right into it, because we've got plenty to play, and I want to make sure our listeners hear everything. Because it's one thing for Matt and I to read a quote for you, but it's another to actually hear it from the exact person. So kind of want to give you guys the opportunity to hear that. So let's just start with Michael Reinsdorf. Here's his opening statement to all the beat reporters, and kind of just talking about what started this initial process of them thinking about making changes this offseason.
John Paxson came to me and my dad back, I think it was around December, and we started talking, and he felt that the organization needed to make a change and an upgrade. He felt we were too set in our ways. And, you know, when you look at it, our basketball department had long been one of the smallest departments in the league, and it hadn't really grown with the times. And in John's words, we needed to make changes in terms of the leadership and structure that would set up the Bulls for the next 10 to 15 years. Essentially, I think what he wanted to do was make changes that would not only address immediate needs, but also would set the Bulls up for long-term success. And during these conversations with John, and there were multiple conversations, John also made it clear to us that he would change his role or step down if that's what was best for the Chicago Bulls, because at the end of the day, he's a Chicago Bull, and that's what he cares most about.
Matt, that was interesting to me to hear Reinsdorf say that in the first couple of minutes. Him saying that Paxson gave him these ideas and told him that the Bulls were set in their own ways, do you believe that more so as an idea that Paxson came to the ownership with, or they all kind of came to that realization as they start seeing zero fans sitting in their seats in mid-December and a team that's have single-digit wins in December?
I believe that we could be sitting here today with the same front office structure as we had when this season kicked off, if not for John Paxson. I believe that. Like, it's disgusting to me that that's what it took. But we kind of heard John Paxson say that. And I think John Greenberg had a column of for The Athletic earlier today, or maybe yesterday, about, if you recall, a John Paxson interview on Sports Talk Radio in Chicago in December of 2018. So it was like when year two of the rebuild was getting off to a pretty rocky start, and he was asked about his job security. And he said, look, you know, I believe in our vision for this rebuild. I believe in the people we have in our building. I believe in our players. If it ever gets to a point where I stop believing that I am the right person to lead this, then I will walk into Jerry's office, which now essentially for all intents and purposes is Michael's office, and say, we got to change this. And that's what happened. And it's like, to me, it's still worrisome when you talk about, we love the AK hire, a guy who gets nothing but praise for being one of the greatest minds of basketball right now and is respected not just in the NBA but internationally, and all the pieces that he is doing to build into his new front office structure. Everything we hear so far, we like. What worries me still is the ownership group and the fact that Michael Reinsdorf needed John Paxson to come to him to say, hey, I got to fire myself because this all sucks. That's worrying to me.
It was eye-opening to me, too. And, you know, I think back to that. That was, what, Christmas Day 2018. He was talking with David Schuster, and he kind of made that joke. And that was something that he brought back up, too, like about 2 months later when they were talking on The Score. And he had said, you know, I think Danny Parkins had asked him, you know, you had made a comment about things not working out, and will you relieve yourself of your duties if this thing does not look like it's turning the way it should be? I'm very surprised that he held to that. And I get that he was kind of tongue in cheek with that comment, and I still believe that 100%. But at the same time, it makes you wonder now, even more so than ever, that we, all the criticism that was going on to Paxson, if it really should have all been piled onto him, or if it was more of something that he was being blocked from being able to do or to make change because nobody else seemingly wanted to do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, Reinsdorf probably saw what was going wrong this season. And, you know, you mentioned the empty seats at the United Center. A fan base that had appeared to completely check out on this team. And, you know, even as people like you and me who were still watching this team play every night, so we could do this podcast and, your 670 radio station that you work for being the radio partner with the Bulls, me doing Outsiders with NBC Sports Chicago. Like we were of a small group that we're sitting there saying, well, you know, we are the diehard fans. We will continue to watch this, you know, this dumpster fire. But you could tell even just from Bulls Twitter, interactivity was down. Viewership was down. People tuned out because the product was that bad. And especially after year three of the rebuild started with this wonderful optimism at Media Day, which, you know, I appreciated. I appreciate the goals that they set. I wasn't buying it yet. But like how poorly it started after they set that goal and that level of optimism for themselves, you know, it's no wonder that people tuned out. So I think that part is certainly something that got Michael Reinsdorf's attention, not to mention the, oh my gosh, are these really the numbers we're getting at home games this season? Has it really gotten this bad? I think between that and Paxson coming to him and saying, hey man, this isn't working, is how we got here. And I think the final straw you know, the straw that broke the camel's back was All-Star Weekend. I think all of those factors collectively is what got us to this point.
That's interesting that you say that you point to All-Star Weekend, and I guess I keep tending to forget about that, but that was, there was three or four huge moments that happened on national TV that were embarrassing, that I think for maybe you and I who pay attention to the team every single day, it's just like, yeah, it was another thing, but that seemed to be, like you were saying, the kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. I want to continue. I found a cut from Paxson where somebody had asked him how much longer he planned on doing this from December of 2018 that I want to play for you. But here's Reinsdorf first talking about the next steps after Paxson had that conversation with him and his dad, what he decided to do after that.
So at that point, after those initial conversations, I started to spend a lot of time talking to a lot of people and really trying to understand other teams' organizational structures. I really wanted to understand what other teams are doing differently than us. And during this process, I learned a lot. I learned that there's no one way of building a strong and sustainable operation or team. But the two keys to success are having the right people and the right processes in place. So during this time, John and I were talking and meeting on a regular basis. I started to share with him what I was learning, and John continued to share with me what he was thinking. And it was kind of at this point that John indicated to my dad and me that he was no longer the right person to lead the Chicago Bulls.
So what that told me is basically Paxson said, go take a look around the rest of the league and see how other places are operating and come back and take a look at how we're operating. Maybe that was an eye-opener for Reinsdorf, and then Paxson to basically have to be so blunt to him and say, hey, we need to change things.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that you've already even heard from Arturas in some of these initial interviews he's doing, is talking about modernizing this organization's front office in a way that is a lot more comprehensive and a lot wider reaching, and making sure that all jobs are covered. And I believe he used the phrase blind spots, if I recall a specific interview he's already done, talking about, okay, where is this organization falling short? As I come in and assess everything, where are they not getting it done? And that could be in terms of scouting. It could be in terms of player development. It could be in terms of, you know, asset management. It could be in terms of potential trade workings. It could be, every single piece. And I know one that Bulls fans are really hoping that they look at closely and soon, of course, would be the medical staff, the strength and conditioning staff, because of this team's injury history. So looking at the blind spots and saying, okay, we can hire someone for that. We can hire someone for that. You're telling me you had all these jobs assigned to this one person? All of those jobs assigned to that one person? No, it's too much. In today's NBA, with all of the things you have to do to put your organization on the best foot forward to being a winning organization, the Bulls were well short of how a modern NBA front office runs. And AK is going to come in and fix all of that.
Yesterday was the first step, although it probably was a baby step, from rock bottom, Matt. We were sitting at rock bottom for, 2 years? And we felt like it just kept getting lower and lower and lower. But yesterday truly felt like the first step from rock bottom. But since you brought it up, let's just go to Karnišovas's reaction, or I guess comments, from what he thinks a modern NBA front office looks like.
It depends on also, you know, having a philosophy. You know, my professional philosophy is, you know, knowing players, you know, constant communication, roster balance, and deal-making creativity. You know, it's a team sports. As a leader, I have to understand the individual role and commit to execution of those responsibilities. You know, so, I mean, when I come in and I'm going to have time to do that, I'm going to evaluate the current structure and where are the blind sides, you know, blind spots. I already hired two guys, J.J. Polk and Pat Conley, who are going to join the organization. So I already started that process. And my next step is to hire a GM. You know, this process is going to be extensive and diverse. I was telling Michael that I have advantage over him in terms of hiring a right person, because you know, personally, I know most of those guys, you know, in that industry, you know, over the years, you know, my role in scouting and front office, I got to know them. And, you know, the list is very extensive. The talent pool is great. And I will explore all the options. I believe I will hire the best person for the job.
I think those are telling points, too. If they allow him to have 100% of the say on who's going to be the GM, and that seems like what Reinsdorf's going to allow him to do.
Yeah, and I think I thought it was funny that it was kind of, I'm sure AK didn't mean it this way, but it kind of came across as like a passive jab at Reinsdorf, kind of like being like, yeah, so it's going to be easier for me to go through this process of looking at these potential GM hires and filling out all these other roles in the front office because I know these people. Because I've been working in professional basketball for a long time, and Michael is, you know, again, I'm not trying to put words in AK's mouth here, but Michael Reinsdorf is a, you know, a chairman and president born of nepotism who knows nothing about basketball and doesn't know people in the league. Like, that's what it sounded like.
It is funny. I thought about that too the first time I heard that, and I kind of laughed to myself, but I was like, thinking about too, obviously Lowry Marketing kind of does that sometimes where it's unintentionally blunt. It, like the way you and I would say something would be differently interpreted the way Marketing maybe would say it or Karnashovas. But I kind of laughed at that too. But it is true though, if you think about it, it's very bluntly stated, but he does. It would make no sense for Reinsdorf to hire the guy because, sure, he knows a little bit about him from talking to people, but AK knows these guys because day in, day out, that he has relationships with all of them. He's seen them actually in work, whereas Reinsdorf, it's kind of like, you know, inviting somebody in because you knew them from conversations you had from half a dozen people, and, oh, I like that guy after one conversation. So if they let AK just make the hire 100% him, I'm fully confident he's going to find the right guy. And his first move is removing Gar Forman as GM, I think, kind of tells you that.
Yeah, and that was very quick. I know that there was some concern from the fan base about what we had heard, which is they might reassign Gar to the scouting department. And we were all like, wait, timeout. Didn't that already happen? Like, maybe not in title, but in action. In terms of what power he still has, what job he still has, what role he plays, from multiple sources, we had heard reports that they essentially already just reassigned him to be like, hey, Gargo scout, John's going to take it from here. So if that's what happened and that's all that happened, Bulls fans, I think, would have been very upset by that. And of course, it was very nice, I think, for the fan base to have their whatever little faith they had left, you know, rewarded by like, okay, the Bulls made the announcement official with their press release on AK's hiring, and then we heard Gar Forman had been relieved as GM and was dismissed by the team, what, like 45 minutes later? He wasted no time with that one.
And I love the person to ask the question was, of course, you guess it. I know you're going to guess it. Who do you think asked the What's question that? About Gar Forman and Jim Boylan?
Oh, was it our pal Joe?
It was. Here's a listen to AK talking about the decision to fire Gar Forman, and then also talking about there being no real timetable set for whether or not he's going to make a decision on Jim Boylan. So let's listen to both of those real quick.
So regarding Gar, I think after some consideration and conversation, you know, it was apparent that we have different philosophies and would prevent us from moving forward. I'm sure Gar gave his best to the Bulls organization. But those decisions are never easy. I was hired to effect change on the current, you know, situation. So that was the decision behind that. In terms of talking to Jim and the rest of the coaching staff, I already started this process. I'm going to do my comprehensive evaluation of every department and ensure I give time because, as we all know, we're limited right now to what we can do. You know, instead of being in the, you know, practice facility and being in Chicago, we are at home and we're on an audio call. So it makes it difficult.
So you don't have an exact time frame of what you want to do with the coaching staff?
No, for now, we're going to be evaluating, communicating, and seeing how I can help them. At the same time, there's no timeline for hiring GM. I'm going to take my time as well because it's a very important decision for me.
So I think people kind of freaked out when they saw that on Twitter. And I did see Casey Johnson and both Joe Cowley follow up on that. Both kind of said the same thing, is like, just because he's saying there's no timetable on the decision doesn't necessarily mean Jim Boylan is staying or going. It's exactly what it means, is there's no decision, but I wouldn't stamp that as Jim Boylan is staying next season. Would you?
No, absolutely not. The way I see it, there is no benefit to Karnišovas right now to fire Jim Boylan with the current status of the NBA and this season may or may not resume, that's in this weird purgatory shutdown.
You're right.
I mean, you might see some benefit to letting the players all know, hey man, like, just, you know, hang in there. This is gonna happen. This change is happening. We'll get this guy out of your hair. So in that sense, maybe that would be the one positive. But guess what? Because of this quarantine, Boylan ain't bugging his players right now. I mean, he may be like calling to check up on him, but guess what? They can screen his calls if they want to. The Bulls might, for whatever silly reason, they decided to like let Jim Boylan issue his own press release welcoming AK to the organization, which was hilarious. You know, I touched on that yesterday. But guess what? I'm pretty sure all of the Bulls players right now, especially ones who the Bulls would like to keep around to continue evaluating, who they still might believe in as a part of the core, and AK has said he likes some of this young talent on this team, have all been told, bypassing Jim Boylan in a line of communication, hey, Jim's not going to be the coach next year, so y'all just stay safe, like, lay low, play some NBA 2K, and we can't make it official yet, but Boylan is gone.
That's, I'm not gonna dispute you on that. You're right.
So yeah, I think you're 100%. I don't have any other comment because you're 100% spot on that. Let's listen to Reinsdorf. Here's something that I pulled that I thought was very, very important, and it's something that I think we can reference, Matt, going over the next couple of years, talking about whether AK has success or not here in Chicago. I think he can bring us back to holding Reinsdorf kind of accountable for what he thinks, and maybe some of the decisions, if they're not 100% made from AK, if there's all of a sudden ownership kind of dipping their toe back into decision-making on the basketball side of things. I think this is really, really important.
I believe, this is my view of the role ownership should play in sports, and certainly in terms of basketball, is the ownership is responsible for hiring the right person to lead the basketball team, and then should step to the side and let the basketball people do their work. And if we pick the wrong person, it can take years to recover. And so we needed to get this right.
So their decision was AK. Now everything that goes on the basketball side of decision-making should be on AK, correct?
Yeah.
So I think that if maybe 2-3 years down the line, we're starting to talk about maybe some struggles, maybe a little bit of adversity, as like Jim Boylan would like to say, and maybe they start to dip their toe back into decision-making power, I think that should be a thing that we can hold accountable to Reinsdorf, as far as allow AK to do his thing, whether it takes 3 years, whether it takes 5 years, but allow him to make 100% of the decisions and don't kind of step in their way. And I think that, to me, gives me some assurance for Michael Reinsdorf, is he wants to get this right. He understands it now at this point, no matter how long it took to get to this point. And hopefully he stays true to that word.
Yeah, and I think it's part of the reason why it took us this long to get here. Like, we've always known that about the Reinsdorf. They are a very hands-off ownership group. They say, we're going to hire people who know this sport, whether it be the NBA in basketball or MLB in baseball, Bulls or White Sox. We're going to hire people, and we're going to let them do their jobs. They hired Paxson. You know, Jerry dragged him out of the broadcast booth I gave him power and said, run this for 17 years. 17 years. And it took Paxson himself coming to Reinsdorf to say, I can't do this. We got to change this. That is the amount of loyalty, and combining that loyalty with the belief that we hire people to do their jobs and leave them alone. That's the way that the Reinsdorf have always operated. So, you know, I know Bulls fans are wondering, you know, are we on day two of a 17 year long AK regime? It's possible. I certainly hope that we see more good than bad. I certainly hope that we see more than one conference finals appearance in 17 years if he gets that long. I would say that Paxson had an extra layer and an extra level of loyalty and love from the Reinsdorfs because of his playing days. That AK, as the first outside hire in the Reinsdorf era that started in 84, he might not have that long of a leash. But guess what? At least Michael Reinsdorf, for all of the ways in which I think he has just, over the past 10 years since becoming president of this organization, done nothing to help it other than financially and putting money in his own pockets, this at least was a step of recognizing that the person that he had been leaving alone to let do the job, and again, with the caveat of it took Paxson coming to him to say it, picked somebody smart outside of the organization, zero previous ties to the organization other than he played against the Dream Team in 92. He played against the Bulls in an exhibition game in 97. That is it. That is the only connection that this smart, highly respected person in NBA and international basketball circles had before coming here. And I hope that Michael leaves him alone and lets him do his job.
I kind of led the search. We did an extensive search.
I think he will too. I honestly do. And if you go back and think about it, the first clip that we heard Reinsdorf talk about Paxson's first discussions, he talks about how Paxson said, we need to make changes and bring somebody in here that's going to set us up for success over the next 10 to 15 years. So you may as well be right. Maybe they give him the keys for 10 to 15 years. But I'm confident they gave it to the right guy. It sounds like just from everything you hear from anybody that speaks about him, it seems like they pointed to that guy as being the next in line to have an opportunity to have a job like this and feel equipped to do that. So I'm excited and I'm glad they made this hire, and I'm even more confident after listening to AK. There's one other thing I wanted Bulls fans to hear from Reinsdorf and from Karnišovas's teleconference, and Matt, we'll play more clips from radio hits that they did. If there's anything interesting that they've said that they didn't address on the teleconference, play that later in the week. But I thought the opening statement was probably pretty good for people to hear, and also there's one clip within that I kind of want to talk about to round out the show. So let's listen to AK's opening statement.
Our ultimate goal is clearly to bring an NBA championship to the city of Chicago. That is what every team in NBA strives for. All we can control is our approach and the process behind every decision. A firm foundation is absolutely vital. I'll build that here in Chicago. No skipping steps. There is a systematic approach to success that will be the product of focused and intentional hard work and diligence. We will strive for constant improvement. Chicago is a great sports town with a long, robust sports history. The city is made up of very passionate fans. Earning the enthusiasm and excitement back from the fans for the Chicago Bulls is both a challenge and something I very much look forward to. These fans deserve a team that they can be proud of. And my objective is to get us back to relevancy.
Right there, Matt. That last 17 seconds.
Earning the enthusiasm and excitement back from the fans for the Chicago Bulls is both a challenge and something I very much look forward to. These fans deserve a team that they can be proud of. And my objective is to get us back to relevancy.
If that doesn't get you on board as a fan, or at least perk your ears up, raise your eyebrows a little bit. I don't know what does. He recognizes that Bulls fans have turned away. There's not as many Bulls fans that cared about this team that there were 5 years ago. And having somebody that's running your basketball operations understand that and actually care about that, that's what we've been asking for a decade. And I think we're finally going to get that. And I'm not telling fans to jump on board right away. Let's see some action being made. And we saw a decision made yesterday that I think pleased a lot of fans. But let's see some more decision making. But I think that's the first step for your basketball ops guy to recognize that and understand that about his fans.
Yeah, I think it's important that he recognizes that and not just saying that, you know, I want to earn, you know, the trust of fans, and I want to earn the enthusiasm and the excitement about this organization, and I want to get us, you know, I want us to be relevant. He said, I want to earn the enthusiasm and excitement of the fans back. You know, I want to get us back to relevancy. So I think, yeah, maybe it's a little bit of a dig on how poorly this organization had fallen apart, and he is recognizing that he has to come in and rescue us. But that's the reality of the situation. And I'm glad he didn't sugarcoat that. I'm glad that he is aware, and I'm guessing it didn't take the Reinsdorf telling him, hey, just so you know, our fan base hates us right now. Like, that was apparent All-Star Weekend when everybody came to Chicago and the collective NBA world said, hey, what the fuck is up with the Bulls? Why do they suck so much? It was not like something that was a caveat to taking the job that AK would be oblivious to. Everyone in the world knew that one of the most passionate NBA fan bases was also perhaps right now the most disgruntled fan base. And even more dangerously and more sadly than disgruntled, they had gone past disgruntled and went to downright apathetic. That's where we were. It was like, if you were still paying attention, you were pissed. But most of us weren't paying attention because we stopped caring, because we couldn't deal with it anymore. So clearly he's aware that that's where the fan base is right now. Like you said just a moment ago, starting from rock bottom. And I'm glad that he's aware of that, because this fan base, if he shows us proper move, signs of promise, player development, save Lauri Markkanen, develop Kobe White, do X, Y, and Z, we know that this fan base will come back in droves. And no judgment to those who said, hey, man, these years are too rough. I'm going to peace out. Unlike, you know, our pal C-Red Fred, who's like, if you didn't think they were winning the title next year, you're not a real fan. Nah, if you wanted to check out for a while, fine. No judgment. If you are excited about this hire and think that maybe things are finally going to go the up way on a bend instead of continuing to fall like the deepest first drop of a roller coaster, welcome back. Open arms. We're all hoping for the same stuff.
It's a learning moment, and we'll learn from it.
It's the first step back to relevancy, even if it is a baby step from, I don't know, 50 feet underwater. If we're at rock bottom at this point, and that's the first step back, I'll take it. This offseason is, you know, we said last year that offseason was going to be critical. This is going to be a critical offseason, too, to see the moves that they make, not only with the coaching staff, but with the roster as well. And I'm excited to hear how the players react after having conversations with Karnišovas and maybe a new coaching staff at some point, and everybody else that's going to be a part of the organization going forward. I'm excited to see how the players react, the guys that are going to be here long term, whether it be LaVine, whether it be Markkanen, whether it be Kobe White or Wendell Carter Jr., any of those guys, because that's the most important, is to hear how they react to it, especially Zach LaVine. I think that was an important one. And I'm curious what kind of message this sends to LaVine as far as, hey, maybe you were thinking about conversations you were going to have this offseason about saying, hey, if you guys aren't going to make moves, I want to be out of here. Maybe those kind of had faded to the back of LaVine's mind, and let's hope so, right?
Yeah. And, you know, again, I'm not necessarily worried about which players are who are worried right now, which players have had their minds set and had their minds put at ease right now, because what I want is somebody who is new to the organization, who is a lot smarter than everyone else who had been in charge of player development and player evaluation over the last several years, coming in and saying, okay, what do I have with this roster? What can I make work with the style that I want to play and that I want our coaching staff to install, and what won't work? And I am right now preparing myself mentally for the reality that as much as I have come to love and appreciate Zach LaVine for everything he's tried to do for this organization in these very dark years, AK might decide that Zach LaVine's talents do not fit what he wants to do. And that as a player with two very team-friendly years on his contract remaining for a guy who's like a 25-5-5 player, he is the most tradable piece that would bring back the most value right now if AK wanted to shake things up right out of the gate. So I'm not worried about any of these players having their minds put at ease right now. And I want AK to come in and evaluate every single player on the roster, just like I want him to evaluate every single department in this organization that has been run so poorly before he got here.
It's an interesting point. I'm curious to how he feels about the status of LaVine, what he thinks about him as far as top 25, top 50 player in the league right now, and curious what he values in LaVine's game. And you're certainly right. Maybe he doesn't fit the system or the ideal system that he's looking for, or maybe even the coach that he brings in or the GM that he brings in doesn't necessarily feel that LaVine fits. But I mean, damn, man, even with Karnišova still being here and being the new guy, it's going to be awfully damn hard to get the same value you have right now in LaVine out of a trade. And anything you do in that deal, unless you're landing a number one pick this year or maybe a future number one pick, I mean, you're going to end up losing that trade. But maybe you need to kind of set yourself back and allow AK to develop his own guys and pick his own guys before we can really move forward, instead of trying to piecemeal together what we already have. So
yeah, I think the bottom line, Jordan, is that there is nothing on this roster right now. There is nothing in this organization as he arrives to say that's an untouchable piece.
Right.
Because why? This organization has been a joke. They tore it down when they decided that Jimmy Butler wasn't good enough to build a title contender around, and the 3 years following have been from bad to worse. And even the tail end of the Jimmy years were some pretty bleak, ugly years from a national perspective of what are the Bulls doing? What are the Bulls doing? Nothing right now. If Jimmy Butler was not untouchable, nothing the Bulls have right now is untouchable.
That's a good point. And I'm excited to have those conversations with you and also the conversations with our listeners too, to kind of get their thoughts, what they think about this and what kind of moves they think might be coming in the offseason. You can hit us up at 331-979-1369 if you want to drop a voicemail or a text message. I'm excited for tomorrow's mailbag, Matt, because I know we've got a ton of text messages and a ton of voicemails. So if you want to get your reaction in there and you want to hear yourself on the show, go ahead and drop it for us at 331-979-1369. We're on Twitter at Jordan C. Maui, at Bulls_Peck, and at LockedOnBulls. If you don't have social media or you can't reach us by our text or voicemail line, you can always email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Maui. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
This guy's pretty cool. He knows
his... Oh, boy, there are a lot of different places I could go, but I'm a good boy.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Maley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com